Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. How are you this fine day, Kieran? I understand you're excited because you're going to a gig tonight, Kieran, but we've added extras.
That's right. Myself and the Baroness, we're going to see Star Sailor, a Britpoppy band from that era, if you like Travis. I think one of the guys from Travis actually now plays with Star Sailor, or I may have got that wrong. James, who is the singer, he follows me on Twitter because he's a big football fan. And I dropped him a line saying that we're coming to the gig, myself and the Baroness, and he's offered us backstage passes to come in and say hello. How rock and roll is that?
What's gone wrong with the world, Kieran, that rock stars are inviting accountants backstage to their gigs? It's like, who have we got coming backstage? We've got Jonathan Ross coming back this, Jimmy Carr maybe? Maybe, yeah. No, we've got Kieran Maguire. What, from The Price of Football? Is the Baroness coming? Oh, yes. It's a different world, Kieran, isn't it? We should point out, and not because you're going to a gig this evening, Kieran, or indeed that I'm going to see him in the fourth part one. We are recording this on Tuesday, just a day before. So if something massive does happen on Wednesday, if, for example, and you wouldn't put it past them, the Premier League decide to dock Man City 115 points tomorrow afternoon, we will cover that on Sunday in great detail. Yes. Speaking of which, Kieran, it's Newsday. The big news story is that we finally have the outcome of Everton's second breach of the Premier League financial rules, which I think it's fair to say, just anecdotally and looking at social media, has left Everton fans very angry and the fans of other clubs rather bemused, considering that their losses that were announced last week were huge. I think 2 points seems to be slightly baffling to those of us who are not of an Everton persuasion, Kieran.
Right. I think how you get to that 2-point deduction is intriguing in its own right. And you probably need to get a calculator up because there's increases and decreases, which I'm going to go through. The reason why what we have today is, and some people again have asked us, why couldn't the Everton and the Forest cases have been held simultaneously and speeding up the process? The reason for that is that the independent commission wanted to be seen to be creating some form of precedent and looking for some form of consistency in terms of how punishments were going to be awarded. You could have had, for example, you could have had the two commissions sitting at the same time, and one of them concluded that a points deduction is appropriate, and the other one had concluded that a fine was appropriate, and that would have just kicked off huge style. So that's why we have what we have today. The problem that is that nobody envisaged that you would have effectively three sets of charges, admittedly two of them are against one club, taking place in a relatively small amount of time. So I've always sort of given this sort of this cab rank analogy and to get it all done before the end of the season, I think you're going to have to go to the Grace Jones pull up to the bumper approach in terms of, they are going to have to really work hard now to deal with the appeals, but we'll sort out the appeals later. In respect of Everton, what the commission said is, first of all, we believe that you have breached the limit, and we think it's a minimum breach of £16.5 million. There is a separate issue which the commission says, it's so complicated in our view. Well, I think it's quite straightforward. It's so complicated in our view that we are not going to reach a conclusion, and we're effectively going to kick part of the case into next season, which is going to cause further anger from Evertonians and further bemusement from the fans of other clubs, as you mentioned earlier. But the reason why we've ended up with 2 points is as follows. Is that for breaching the limit, you get an automatic 3-point penalty. Then for each £6.5 million over the limit, where they got £6.5 million, it does seem to be an arbitrary number, we're going to add on 1 point. So Everton, they had two £6.5 million elements. So that's going to be a further 2 points. So we're now up to 5 points. Now, the Premier League, by all accounts, wanted a 5 point deduction. Where it got that 5 point deduction from, heaven only knows, given that it wanted 12 point deduction for Everton's first breach. Then, and this was something we have discussed on more than one occasion, Everton have already been penalised for going over the limits in 2021 and going over the limits in 2022. And PSR is over a three-year period. So the commission said, we take that on board as well. You shouldn't really be punished twice for the same old offence. So it says, right, you're on 5 points, and we're now going to take that down to three. We're going to knock back 2 points for double counting, for double jeopardy, however you want to describe it. And then it also said Everton have been proactive on this. They've sort of flagged that they felt that they were over. So for effectively handing yourself in, sometimes, if I was involved in a traffic accident or something, and the first thing I do, I phone up the police and say, look, I've been involved in an RTA. We need to get this sorted. For that effective element, a further 1 point adjustment was made, and we're now down to 2 points, which is the position. So Everton have now got a drop. I still don't, I know this isn't a football show, I still don't think they'll go down. But clearly they're worse off than they were on Saturday at 5 o'clock.
It's quite difficult to unpack this, Kieran, for fans of other clubs. Parking the fact, we know Everton fans are angry, we can understand that, and this is not in any way, shape or form anti-Everton or anti their fans. But before I ask you three questions, Kieran, I feel I should apologise to our listeners. When I was searching for two cool names to go backstage at a gig, why I came up with Jimmy Carr and Jonathan Ross as the coolest options, I don't know. I think it's possibly because Ali and I had been discussing both Jimmy Carr and Jonathan Ross, not with the most purple of pros, just this morning, so they were stuck in my head. But three things, Kieran, as I say, mainly for the benefit of other fans. It does seem to outsiders, without your knowledge or without lawyers' knowledge, without seeing all the information, that this is a lesser punishment for a bigger offence. I mean, the losses that were announced on Easter Sunday seem to me to be much bigger than, and bear in mind that this is a rolling three-year period and so on. Secondly, given that it is quite a low number of points, the deduction, it seems, will they appeal? And thirdly, and this is an issue that a lot of people have been raised, a lot of rumour and a lot of speculation about the fact that Everton, as a football club, may have been given notice of this points deduction, that they may have known what it was going to be before they played Burnley on Saturday. And there are people, there are journalists, there are fans, there are Burnley fans saying, well, that's not quite right, because that would change the way Everton approached the game. If Everton had been told on the Friday that they had a 10-point deduction, they would play Burnley in a different fashion. So I'd be interested to hear what your views are on that. I can't say that I'm surprised that a club would be given prior notice, but it does seem a bit odd if the other club they were playing the next day weren't also given prior notice, you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll answer those questions in turn. As far as being a lesser punishment, it was 5 points. And so that's broadly in line, I think, with what we've seen in respect of Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest were given a 6-point deduction and then 2 points off for mitigation. Everton were given a 5-point deduction and then 2 points for double counting and 1 point for mitigation. So we want to encourage people to do the right thing. In an ideal world, you don't breach in the first place. But if you do, I remember Birmingham City, they were proactive in terms of their relations with the EFL a couple of seasons ago, and they got a benefit coming back to them. So when we had the discussion 3 or 4 weeks ago, before we knew the extent of Everton's losses, and also looking, having read the 60 pages of the report, the Premier League pointed out Everton knew that they were probably going to be in breach of the limit, but they still went and signed players. And Everton's argument said, well, look, we needed to sign players. We're players leaving. We can't, you know, we need to be able to put in some form of competitive performance on the pitch. So, you know, the commission wasn't in favour of either of the parties there. So the punishment we thought originally would probably be I thought it was going to be 3 points before we knew Everton's losses were so big. And I honestly thought that Everton could get two or three of those points back for the reasons that we've given. In terms of the appeal, Everton are going to appeal. Yeah, they have put out a note on their website to that effect. Because of this cab rank approach, we've got to hear the Nottingham Forest appeal first. And remember, we are now into the second week of April. That commission will probably be taking place, let's say, next week. You've then got, you know, a week in which the judgment takes place and then the announcement and so on. So the Everton appeal could take place before the end of the season, but you won't necessarily get the publication of the commission's verdict until after the season. And this, I think, doesn't look too clever from the Premier League's perspective. So that's an issue. I think that there must be a better solution for this. Now, I did hint that there could be yet another set of charges with regards to Everton. And this all circulates around the club borrowing money to build the new stadium and how the interest on that has been treated. Is there a case for saying, look, folks, let's bang a couple of heads together. Everton drop the appeal and the Premier League or the Commission say, we're going to drop the potential additional set of charges which could take place in next season. That way, at least we've got certainty going into that final match of the season. And people are saying, well, the Premier League will suffer long-lasting damage. It won't. It will suffer short-lasting damage. Football fans, as we know, have got remarkably short memories. Especially the international fans. That's not a criticism of international fans. Their focus tends to be on other things. You know, whereas I think we as legacy fans, we are more concerned about the integrity of the relegation fight and so on.
I haven't got a short memory, Kieran. If Dermot Gallagher ever finds himself in a dark alleyway with me, I will be asking why he disallowed a goal against Leeds in the FA Cup 2.5 decades ago. I think I speak for many fans here.
Yeah, I and I'm exactly the same. I still remember that match at Selhurst Park in which 5 penalties were given.
Yeah, which we managed to miss.
Miss four of them.
Four of them, yeah. Yes. So there are two things you've said that I want to come back to again, but can we just deal with the third of my original questions, the idea that Everton knew beforehand what the punishment was going to be?
Right, okay. I will try to be as honest as I can be here. I was contacted on Thursday and Friday, and I was told that it's a 2-point deduction. Now, football, as we know, is full of rumour, full of gossip. The people that contacted me aren't the sort of, you know, there are blokes who we know who always claim to be in the know.
Oh,
and they do this because they want to be seen to be the centre of attention. These particular parties were not that type of individual. You know, they're people who I've got a lot of respect for. I didn't put that out on social media. I didn't think it was appropriate to do so. I don't want to be seen to be stirring things. I know other journalists had heard, and again, they felt that the threshold for publication had not been passed. But at the same time, they were aware of this. So for the sake of transparency, we contacted the Premier League with regards to this, and the Premier League have given what I consider to be a fair answer. And the Premier League have said, the club would not know. The only people that potentially would have known before the weekend would be the lawyers acting on behalf of both sides. And you know, lawyers follow the rules of embargo. They are professional, and they wouldn't have leaked it. So in the eyes of the Premier League, nobody at the club would have known. And it could be that the people that contacted me might have just struck. Yeah, they might have just done their sums. Yeah, I'd done my sums, and I'd sort of thought it'll be probably two or three. And yeah, we all gossip with regards to this. We've had a response from the Premier League, and I think the Premier League have been fair here. They are confident that the club will not have known anything. I think if one club does know the information and another doesn't, that does call into question issues with regards to the competitive integrity of the game. But that has been rejected.
You said something there, Kieran, that we'll have a lot of fans going, well, this is why we think Everton should have had more points deducted. Because you used the Premier League referred to the fact that Everton knew they would be in breach, but they still continued to sign players. And this is where fans of other clubs are slightly bemused by that. I'm in the same way that Luton fans will be bemused by Nottingham Forest saying, well, how could we compete without spending loads of money that we didn't have? Luton fans will say, well, that's exactly what we've tried to do. And when you're saying that Everton were quite open about the fact they knew they would be breaching, but they still went ahead and did it, that's where you can see where, and again, this is not any criticism of Everton fans whatsoever, but you can see then where other fans are slightly annoyed by what seems to be going on. Because in the final analysis, as you say, Everton probably won't go down. And if they don't go down, they haven't really been punished, have they? I mean, they've lost the £2 million from each league position, so they may have lost £6, £7 million. But to outsiders and to fans of the three clubs who will go down, I think they will think that Everton and Forest have got off lightly, in a sense.
Yes, I can understand that viewpoint. We have taken the view on we've been consistent, I think, on this show to say that what goes on the pitch stays on the pitch and should direct where you finish at the end of the season. And on that basis, Everton should stay up. At the same time, being able to sign players on higher fees with higher wages, because football is a talent industry, means that the statistical analysis tends to say that there's a very high correlation between your overall spend and where you end up at the end of the season. And yes, there's differences on a 2 or 3 year basis, but not tend to be much longer than that. So you can understand, first of all, Everton's argument that we needed to sign somebody. We couldn't put out a bunch of kids. And equally, you can understand the feeling of annoyance from other clubs. When I talk to Everton fans, what they've said to me is, well, actually, our beef, we can understand the views put forward by the likes of Luton and Burnley. Our beef's actually with the club itself, because it went and signed a load of crap in terms of those players who didn't deliver. And again, there's references to players A, B and C in relation to what Everton did during 22-23 and whether or not Everton could have been more active in the transfer market, for example, with regards to selling players. And that didn't appear to be the case, and the club put forward a sort of a bit like the Brennan Johnson argument, is that we feel that another year of development of this player will enhance the player's market value, and therefore we chose not to sell.
How many times have we said, Kieran, stop saying Brennan Johnson, player A? No one's supposed to know who he is.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
We discussed on the last pod that we would talk about alternatives to FFP today, in particular luxury tax. But given that the Everton news has now broken and that we have discussed it in some length and we do have other news to come, I feel that we should probably hold that over till a later pod so we can give it full justice, as well as looking at other options that are being put forward. It does seem that FFP's days are numbered. It just seems to be a question of what it's replaced with. Two stories from Tottenham, Kieran, both of which I think in their way are probably good news. We did mention last week that Spurs announced massive losses, but it hasn't affected their role at the top of one particular table.
That's right. It's one particular table, which I suspect I'm the only person that maintains.
Have you got a little cut? Is it like the old Shoot magazine? Have you got a little cardboard to cut out with? Yeah. Okay.
I think there's a marketing opportunity there for Price of Football, Kevin. I think we'll be putting it out. It won't be updated. It only gets updated once a year, but you can shift up and down the most profitable clubs in Premier League history. So Spurs lost £89 million, and I think we said, well, it's not a problem from a PSR. Because some people say, hold on, Everton lost £89 million, they got a points deduction. Spurs lost £89 million, they didn't. The reason why Spurs won't have a points deduction is their infrastructure spend in respect of the new stadium is around about 73 million of that 89. So by the time you also factor in the academy, from a PSR point of view, Spurs probably break even every year. Spurs are actually in a very strong position. And this is a question, you know, that we do get asked on a regular basis. How much money can club X, Y or Z spend in the next summer window? In my view, Spurs are actually in an incredibly strong position. They've also sold Harry Kane. For Spurs fans worried about those losses, there's nothing to worry about. You can fill your boots should you so desire. That £72 million infrastructure spend for a 60,000 capacity stadium, that contrasts with West Ham, who are spending £3 million on rent on a capacity stadium, which is broadly the same. Although Spurs did lose a load of money, they are still top of the all-time profit-making clubs in Premier League history. The gap between themselves and Arsenal has narrowed, but Spurs are at plus £212 million. Arsenal are second with 201. And I think the one which completely will baffle people is the fact that Burnley are third. And you go, well, hold on, the Premier League's been going for 30 years. Burnley have been in the Premier League for about eight. Burnley, as a business, always incredibly smartly run. Well, certainly they were under the old owners. I think there's eyebrows raised with regards to the transition following the leverage buyout.
Incidentally, could that £3 million rent that West Ham pay, is that offset against FFP?
Yes. That's an allowable cost. Yeah. Even though it costs, you know, London Council £16 million to then recoup £3 million in rent. Or rather, it's costing you.
Yeah, well, let's not go down there, Kieran, as your friends at West Ham are currently trying to get a hold of you as we speak. And who knows what they may be offering you. And the second Tottenham story, Kieran, is one that Tottenham fans will have said all along wasn't technically a Tottenham story. No one was ever really worried about the outcome of the huge trial against their former owner, Joe Lewis, but the outcome is now known.
That's right. And indeed, Spurs are going at great lengths along the lines of, Joe Lewis? Never heard of him.
Well, the old boxer.
That's right. He transferred his shares to a trust, which has absolutely nothing to do with him.
You sounded like Ian Hislop then, you know that.
That's an honour.
It is, indeed.
And one other thing to pick up from the Spurs accounts linking it into this is that in the annual report, Spurs did say, we are looking for further investment. Now, what form does that further investment take? Could it involve Daniel Levy or the trust, which was connected with a former owner called Joe Lewis? Could it involve those parties selling some of their shares to a new investor, in which case they pocket the money? Or alternatively, could it involve Tottenham Hotspur Limited issuing new shares, in which case the money goes into the bank account of the club? We don't know that. How much is Spurs worth? Based on my rough and ready calculations, I've got Spurs down at around about £2.5 to £3 billion in terms of value. So if they sell, you know, 10% as FSG did with Liverpool, you know, you're talking £300 million. Could that money be utilised by the club to pay down debt or to invest in talent? That's an operational decision as far as the club is concerned. But back to Joe Lewis, and also tying into points deductions issues, I think we both don't like the idea of points deductions. At the same time, what's a better alternative? And this has always been something which has occupied my thoughts. Joe Lewis has been spectacularly successful in his lifetime. And he is a multi-billionaire. He potentially could have been sent down for up to 45 years. And let's face it, he's 86 years old, so he wouldn't have been coming out. For insider trading. And again, for people not familiar, the allegation that was made, which was effectively he pleaded guilty to, was that instead of giving bonuses and tips to, and I once again quote, friends, private pilots, and assorted lady friends, instead of being given a prison sentence, it was argued by his defence, you know, at his age, it's not good for the prison system, it's not good for his health. They gave him a $5 million fine. Now, a $5 million fine to a multi-billionaire isn't going to touch the sides. So it's very nominal. The company through which he was operating, which was called Broadbay, was given a $44 million fine. But again, that's not really going to have an impact. And I think this is one of the debates that you have, is that if you have a football club which is owned by a sovereign wealth fund or a multi-billionaire, and you introduce within FFP a fine system for breaches, they go, that's fine. Yeah, we're not asked. It's not going to bother us. And therefore, it doesn't act as a deterrent. And if it doesn't act as a deterrent, it means that they're going to do it again with impunity. It would just be seen as a cost of doing business.
Yeah, see, I'm with you. If Palace were 20 points above the relegation zone, I'd be completely against points deduction. But in current circumstances, I'm less against them than I would have been in any other season. When it comes to Joe Lewis, God love him, I like to think that in a kind of Michael Caine 1960s movie style, the judge told him off and fined him £5 million, and Joe Lewis went outside, and there's an open-top Cadillac driven by his chauffeur with certain assorted lady friends in the back, waving bottles of champagne at him, taking him to the airport where his private pilot, who's made loads of money out of the insider trading, whisked him off to a Bahamas island somewhere where he goes, well, that went better than I thought. talking of huge amounts of money, Kieran, I think those Everton fans and Forest fans, who quite rightly say, well, hang on a second, it's all gone quiet on the Man City front, would be interested in this news.
Yes. City Football Group, and we talk about the City Football Group as having certainly the most well-known and arguably the most successful multi-club ownership model, they announced their financial results. And Manchester City generated 81% of all of the revenue from the 8 or 9 clubs which come under the City Football Group umbrella. And that's right and proper. You know, the ticket prices, TV deals in Mumbai, in Melbourne, in MLS are lower than they are in the Premier League. Manchester City also had a spectacularly successful season in 22-23. So it was 81% of the revenue, but it wasn't 81% of the wage bill. It was only 68%. And this is where some of the criticism starts to be levelled. You know, can you shift wages from one club to another? Well, not in respect of players, but in respect of what you might refer to as central services, HR, legal, finance, and so on. You can spread that evenly. So that reduces the cost to Manchester City and increases the cost, or, you know, it is a cost for those other clubs. But I think the issue which caused the highest raising of eyebrows is that the City Football Group lost £127 million in 2023. And you go, okay, well, you know, presumably a lot of that came from Manchester City. Manchester City made an £80 million profit. So we're saying City made an £80 million profit and the rest of the group made a £200 million loss. And that does seem to be an inconsistency that, you know, for the rest of the City Football Group, for every pound they generated, they actually lost £1.20, which seems strange and will provoke a reaction from other clubs' fans.
Well, interest, just in passing, I mentioned on the last pod that before the Man City game on Saturday morning, there were a couple of City fans in the Porson's Arms, including Lloydie, who was keeping the drinking down because he had a marathon the next day. Chatting to one of the other ones, he made a very sensible point about City's 115 charges. He said, considering how potentially huge the penalty would be for these charges, which possibly would include demotion from the Premier League, he wondered why that wasn't being sorted this season as well, because he said that all the, you know, Burnley fans, Luton fans, Everton fans would all be saying, well, hang on, everyone keeps saying we it would be terrible if the appeal wasn't heard till May and the season was finished. So how about that as an argument? And unfortunately, I'd been in the port since 9 o'clock in the morning, so I did have a brilliant answer in there somewhere, but I couldn't quite reach it at the time. But it struck me that was actually a very fair point, and that's from a City fan.
It is. And remember, these charges go back, I think, to, you know, around about 2009 to 2018. It's a mess. The Premier League was so keen to get so many charges allocated against Manchester City, and the cynics will say, and let it be said, this is not a cynical show, the cynics will say, that was very strange because it was just happened to be 24 hours or 48 hours before the government confirmed its desire to create an independent regulator. And as we know, the Premier League is fundamentally opposed to the independent regulator. Where I think the Premier League perhaps shot itself in the foot to an extent is that you talk to a lawyer, well, 115 charges equals we must be given time to put together 115 defences. And if it takes Everton and Nottingham Forest, you know, 2 or 3 months to put together their defences in respect to one charge, it's going to take Manchester City a couple of years. So that's why it could easily be 24, 25 before we get a verdict. That's likely to be appealed in respect of at least some of the charges. So therefore, any ultimate sanction might not take place until 25, 26. And clubs that have been relegated this season and last season, you know, because the charges were last season and the Premier League says, well, yeah, we want to get punishment done in the same season as which the charges. You can understand Leicester, Southampton and Leeds United being angry last season. Equally, you know, we're not being too rude. I think there's a pretty high chance of Burnley and Sheffield United going down unless they put in some spectacular results, plus another. You can understand those clubs feeling aggrieved this season. And could that result in further legal redress against Manchester City at a later date? Everything is possible.
Yeah, the trouble is Man City can afford better lawyers than Burnley. It's my argument. Not that we're a cynical pod, Kieran. You mentioned eyebrows being raised. When you told me early in 2023 how much Premier League clubs owed to other clubs in transfer fees, I had a proper good old-fashioned eyebrow raise. I hadn't had one for several months. But now I'm going to have to hoist my eyebrows up. Literally, I may have to ask Ali to help, pulling them up as far as they can possibly go with how much that figure's gone up.
Yes, clubs are effectively using their credit cards in order to buy players, because we're now looking at a position. At the end of 2022 season, they owed around about £1.8 billion, and that has increased.
To each other?
To other clubs. Now, this is my cause for concern, because a lot of those clubs are either in the Championship or in UEFA.
Right.
A relatively small amount tends to be from other clubs. So that 1.8 billion has gone up to around about 2.5 billion, and that's before Chelsea published their accounts. So, you know, I've got a figure for Chelsea, but it's going to be an out-of-date one. And what it does mean is, to the best analogy I can use, is to a certain extent, we're like we were in 2007 and 2008 when we had the global economic crisis, that we're assuming that everybody's going to pay. And it only needs one or two clubs to say, we owe you £20 million. And I don't think this will be from the Premier League. I think it's more likely to come from certain clubs elsewhere in Europe whose finances are quite precarious. You only need a couple of clubs to say, we can't afford to pay you the next instalment of, you know, 10 million euros, 15 million euros. That means the club that was expecting it, they can't afford to pay for their transfers. And you've got a contagion. And you know, that's what happened in terms of subprime debt in 2007-08, which led to a huge economic crisis on a global basis. So clubs are signing players. You know, lots of fans saying they are signing players, but they're not paying cash for them. They're saying, right, we're buying them on the tick. In my view, there's a way of dealing with this, but it's got to be done on a UEFA basis or a FIFA basis. And what you simply say is that if you are player trading, you have to put down a 50% deposit and you've got to go and pay the rest of the debt within 12 months. And you and I, we're old enough to remember sort of the old rules for HP. You know, and the government used to go and sort of dictate macroeconomic policy through, you know, the ability of my mum or my dad to buy something on HP. And they'd say, well, you've got to go and pay for everything within 12 months or 24 months. And that meant you had less money to spend on other things, which naturally drives down prices.
Two things on this, Kieran. First of all, you know that the Premier League clubs, that figure is 2.5 billion. Firstly, I wouldn't necessarily want you to share this information because it would be sensitive, I imagine, but do you know the breakdown of clubs? Do you know how much each club owes other clubs? And secondly, there will be people listening to this. And my first reaction was when I read the story that isn't that what amortization is for? Isn't amortization a sort of credit card in a way as well? It's just another way of spreading a payment, isn't it?
Right. In terms of the breakdown, yeah, I've got the breakdown club by club.
Okay.
Most of the clubs actually disclose that amount of information.
Oh, okay.
And for those that don't, and there's only a handful, I use a formula. And if they want to go and argue about it, I say, well, you've chosen not to be transparent. So therefore, you know, I'm just responding as I can as an academic to go, well, on the basis of the way that I've done my sums, I feel that this is an appropriate method. I've been consistent in its application. If you've got an issue with it, just show us the real numbers and I'll gladly change them. So Spurs and Manchester United are right at the very top of that table, both owing, I think, more than £300 million each. Spurs are very good at buying players on long-term transactions. With regards to your second point, we're entering a slight accounting rabbit hole here. There is a significant difference between cash, which is what you physically owe, and amortization, which is just a non-cash way of saying, if I sign a player for £40 million on a five-year contract, the cost to the club we're going to work out as £8 million a year. Now, that's not a cash cost. That's an accounting cost. Right, the world of accounting and cash sometimes start to move in opposite directions.
Yeah, but just to reassure myself, Kieran, it wasn't a silly question, was it? It's quite...
No.
Great. Yeah.
The only silly questions are the ones we never ask. That's what I tell every class I teach.
Quite right, too. We've got two stories that take us away from the Premier League, Kieran, before ending with two rather bizarre Man United stories. But the first one, and I feel like this is the third or fourth time I've read this out, Kieran, but Torquay United have now gone into administration. And I'm fairly sure we've had this conversation before, have we not?
Well, yes. What we've had before was the announcement of the club of an intention to go into administration. And that intention to go into administration triggered a 10-point deduction by the National League. That's what's referred to as an insolvency event. What we now have is Torquay United formally appointing administrators. So they will be taking over the day-to-day running of the club. They will be clocking up costs and expenses, though. So that's money leaking out of the football industry. And it's their responsibility to find a new owner for Torquay United. Now, you know, clearly, you know, we're both old enough, and I always think of Torquay United as an EFL team, and you forget that they've dropped out. Yeah. Will it be more difficult to sell a club at that tier? Yes, but they managed it at Wrexham, and look what's happened to Wrexham on the back of that. So there is a formal insolvency taking place. How concerned should people be? Well, first of all, you should be concerned in the sense of the likely impact upon jobs. And, you know, as you know, I used to do this particular role myself. And the thing that I hated most of all, and the reason why I got out of it, I just don't have the cojones for it, was the knowledge that people are going to lose their jobs and their livelihoods on the back of this. So trying to cut costs, another word for costs is jobs. So there's that to take into consideration. People who have supplied Torquay United Football Club with goods and services in good faith, especially if those businesses are, you know, whether the business owner is a fan as well, they're not necessarily going to get paid 100% of what's owed to them. They're not even going to get necessarily 25% of what's owed to them. So those businesses are going to take a hit. And if the administrator fails to find somebody, well, then the next step is closing the business down altogether. So administration is not good news, but I think that it's a viable option, you know, as long as the price being asked is fair, of finding alternate owners.
Yeah, I mean, it's one we'll keep an eye on, obviously, Kieran, but it would seem to me Torquay are an attractive thing, a big fan base. We've spent many years in the, you know, admittedly, the lower reaches of the EFL, so that's possibly where they'll end up again. So let's keep our fingers crossed. And a club we have been keeping an eye on is Motherwell. Now, I would say, Kieran, that this seems like good news, but in recent weeks, every time I've said that, I've got the yes. So is this story from Motherwell good news?
It's news. It could be good for somebody.
Okay.
Motherwell, remember, we had Pat Nevin, the chief executive of Motherwell Football Club, on the show some time ago. They are in discussions with a US family with regards to investment from them. Now, Motherwell is a fan-owned club. Many in the fan base are saying, well, hold on, we've had, for want of a better phrase, private ownership before, and that didn't work. And effectively, the fans have come to the rescue. Why should we, therefore, trust a US-based family in terms of them owning the club? And that's a valid point. Is there examples of clubs going private into fan ownership and coming out again. Well, yes, there are. I mean, we've just mentioned Wrexham, and you know, McIlhenny and Reynolds pitched to the fans, you know, their proposals, their vision for the club going forwards, and also their ability to provide funding for that, whereas the fans can't on an individual basis. We've also seen similar at Portsmouth, where Michael Eisner took over the club, which was a community-owned club. Portsmouth, 99% certain to be playing in the Championship next season. So you can benefit from this. Scottish football is attractive to investors. Hibs have now got some US investments as well, relatively recently. We are seeing owners firmly in the belief that football can progress on both sides of the border through fresh ownership. Equally, for those of us of a romantic notion that like the idea of fan-owned clubs, it potentially could be one less. So we wait to see. All it says is, you know, both parties are moving on to the next stage. That doesn't mean a full sale. It could be just sort of, you know, heads of terms or sort of some form of collaboration. But I would imagine, knowing most American investors, they want control, and control means more than 50% ownership.
Now, Manchester United, Kieran, story one. I'm ashamed to admit, Kieran, that myself and my son, Ed, and I suspect half the nation laughed when Man United conceded two goals in the 109th and 110th minutes against Chelsea. We laughed, Kieran, until we realised who it was they conceded the goals to, and then we felt, oh dear. But if I'd known, Kieran, the sort of slash and burn economic policies that were going on in the background when it comes to Manchester United, I'm ashamed of that laughter, Kieran. Now I've discovered some of the hardships that some Man United staff are having to go through.
Absolutely, and this is one of the paradoxes of having a new owner. Offshore Jim has decided. I'm sticking to that name. Offshore Jim Ratcliffe has appointed a firm of management consultants who will be charging a fortune to take a look at Manchester United's cost base. My view, and without wanting to veer too far onto the football side of football finance, is that Manchester United have been never had a problem spending money historically. They've just not been very good at spending it in terms of the right pegs for the right holes. And it looks as if these management consultants are looking at what we sometimes refer to as corporate excess. So the chauffeur-driven private cars, presumably for executives, and the level of spending on corporate credit cards. And there's so much I could wish I could. Well, there's so much I could say here, but for the sake of allowing producer guy to sleep at night, I'm going to keep quiet about what's being spent on the corporate credit cards. I think it's fair to say is going to come under a greater degree of scrutiny, with a view to trying to save a few quid here and there. Manchester United's problems are not due to the fact that executives are using chauffeur-driven cars. I think that's a symptom of the problem rather than the problem itself. It's the same as parachute payments aren't the problem. They're a symptom of a bigger issue, a bigger problem in terms of lack of or the size of the gap between the Premier League and the Championship. So that's where we are. What I'm more concerned about is that this review of operations by the management consultants could potentially result in job losses at Old Trafford. People will say, well, Manchester United's a very rich club. You know, should that be an issue? Look, yeah, I used to live in Whalley Range in Manchester. It's a lovable, rough and ready part of the city. Where Old Trafford is located, it is, you know, Stretford itself is not a wealthy part of, you know, sort of what you might refer to as the Greater Manchester. It's not Wilmslow, it's not Hale, it's not Mobley, places like that. And there are lots of local people. Manchester United You know, we've given them a lot of credit when they agreed to play the national living wage, and fair play to them. But if they're now going to start to nickel and dime on issues, is that something which is going to be given scrutiny? Are the number of jobs given to local people who are not earning a lot of money at the club, are they going to lose those positions? That's my concern. So, yeah, execs losing their chauffeur-driven Mercedes couldn't care less. This is a Manchester issue.
Well, the problem is, Kieran, it is a Manchester issue, as you say, because if there are job losses, God forbid, it won't be the people who are driven in private cars that lose their jobs, or the ones that have the corporate credit cards. So I'm hoping this is not a story we have to deal with. But in the meantime, if those senior level execs are worried about their corporate credit cards and their private cars, if they want to reach out, I've already had a word with Comic Relief. We are willing to put some sort of package together and maybe get a benefit just to raise some money so they can continue the life of luxury they've been used to. Also, they'd like to perhaps console themselves with the fact that technically Uber is a chauffeur-driven private car.
Yes.
They're readily available. Not the sort of chauffeur that will be getting Joe Lewis type insider trading deals. They might get the occasional fiver if I've been out late. I still can't quite understand how you could tip them before you get in the car. But yeah, they are technically a chauffeur service.
They are. Yeah, true.
Corporate credit card, I can pass no comment on because, as you know, mine is locked away in Ali's drawer. And well, one of them is. One's locked away in Ali's drawer and one's locked away in Bobby Numbers' drawer. And this last Man United story, Kieran, I don't know if you thought the first one made me laugh. This second one, I don't know where to begin with this story. I mean, Jim Ratcliffe is getting a letter from someone that may or may not exist to tell him to stop saying he may or may not exist, essentially.
That's right. I think it was fairly well documented that there were two main parties interested in acquiring Manchester United or a stake in Manchester United from the Glazers last year, one of which was Jim Ratcliffe, and the other one was Sheikh Jassim. Now, Sheikh Jassim has not been seen. By all accounts, he did not personally attend any of the meetings with the banks, with the sales side of the deal in which to divest part of Manchester United. And when you read some of the documentation which came out at the date of sale, it's fair to say that Sheikh Jassim got a bit of a kicking. In the sense that what his team were prepared to offer the A shareholders, i.e. the non-Glazer shareholders, and he was offering to buy everybody's shares instead of just a minority stake, was a lower price than was offered to the Glazers. And I think some of the lawyers felt that was in itself would be in a breach of rules. But overall, there was some very, very dismissive comments. And you know, if I'd been on the receiving end of them on a professional basis, I think you would have felt, you know, that's harming my professional reputation. At the same time, there's one photograph of Sheikh Jassim. If you go onto the internet, you know, he keeps a very low profile from a digital point of view. So Jim Ratcliffe cracked a gag that Jassim didn't exist, and yeah, we are not to endorse or to deny that he made the joke or the validity of the joke or anything. That's all I can say is that last summer, when this deal was taking place, I was walking down Farringdon Road in London, minding my own business. I'd been doing some teaching in London. And I got a phone call from a party claiming to represent Sheikh Jassim, effectively advising us to keep our nose out of commenting upon how we thought the deal was developing. And I didn't know whether it was a wind-up call or whatever. So there are certainly people who are acting for somebody called Sheikh Jassim. But as for his actual whereabouts, we don't know anything.
Can you remember what sort of day of the week it was when you were walking down Farringdon Road? Because that might have been me.
I can think, yes.
Was there a vague sample? With Kieran, I think it's worth reading out the quote from the reports in the media, just in case our lawyers get slightly edgy, that we need to cease the pattern of misleading and defamatory statements. Which is the joke that it doesn't exist. I was thinking of starting a campaign to claim that Jamie Redknapp doesn't exist, but then I thought that would really freak him out. I'll have to choose somebody else. God love Jamie Redknapp. He's like a budgie. If you want him to go to sleep, just cover him up. Thank you to everyone who's donated. Sorry about that. You may have heard a door banging then. That's Ed trying to leave quietly. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that would be very kind of you, and it'd get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And you can go to the same website if you want to buy our latest book, which will be coming out in paperback in September. If you want to hang on a bit and save yourself a couple of quid, we'll be back with our questions pod on Monday. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, thank you for everybody getting in contact, you know, all from the Premier League to somebody who will say that I've got a character in a film wrong. We take it all on board, and we genuinely appreciate it. There's a variety of ways of supporting the show. Patreon is one. If you want an advert-free show, I think if you want to pay £3 a month, you can get an advert-free show. And we are putting together our end-of-season quiz as we speak for our Patreons as a way of saying thank you. There's another way of supporting the show, and that's to give us a review. It helps us with algorithms. It helps us... somehow we're always in the round about the top 30 of the Apple sports charts in the UK. So we are very flattered by that. What is a very niche show, and I like niche shows on other topics. I listen to the Thunderbirds podcast, which goes through every single episode of the Thunderbirds and Stingray and Joe 90. So, and I think it's great. It's good being niche. If you give us a review, it helps us in those charts. Doesn't matter what you say. So you could even say you would rather have the show presented by Jimmy Carr and another, and it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference to us.
Yeah, we might be able to afford another. We definitely can't afford Carr. We're way out of cars.
Even for cash?
Yeah, I possibly shouldn't answer that question, should I? We may have got ourselves into enough trouble with Sheikh Jassim's lawyers without me asking that question. And now you've told me there's a Thunderbird pod, Kieran. That's me for the. That's I know what I'm doing between now and going to see Henry the Fourth Part One. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.